Does picking an outfit have you running a little too fashionably late? We get it. Great taste takes time. That's why Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery, has your back with the largest selection of beer, wine, and spirits delivered in under 60 minutes. Convenience never goes out of style. So if you need to spend some extra time in the mirror instead of at the store, download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com today.
Listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast, part of the Decibel Geek podcast network. This week, we throw a Hail Mary and we bring in God's favorite band, Jesus Chrysler, to talk about all things Chrysler. So hang your rosary beads from your rear view mirror and crank it up.
Welcome to Cobras and Fire. I'm your host, Liz Cannon, and I'm joined, as always, with the deniable Baco. How are you, sir?
I am well, about 2 pounds lighter, if you know what I mean. How are you tonight?
Oh, nice. Dropping a deuce.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to throw in the Kiss reference, get it ready to go, right?
You got it.
That's right. So I am excited. I think we should get down to it, but I should say I, actually. For, you know, you're usually in charge of the interviews, but I lined up one of the most influential bands of the last 20 years, and I'm pretty excited about it. What about you?
Yeah, I couldn't believe you lined something up. Who you got?
We are going to talk tonight to two members of Jesus Chrysler.
Oh,
are you excited or what?
Which Come two? On. Is it Duffy and Shores?
I believe it should be Duffy. I wanted to talk to Duffy, Shores, or Treble, one of those three. Okay. So let's I think I was just told that we are going to get two. So let's get down to it. What do you say?
Hey, I got a small order of business to take care of.
Sure.
We do have a beer contributor for this episode. If it's okay with you, Luce, I gave your beer to Treble. Is that cool?
That's fine. What was it?
My sister contributed to the Buy Us a Beer crowdfunder, and
sure.
She got us Budweiser bottles. That's this beer-fueled Chrysler in the early aughts.
Excellent. Enjoy it.
All right. Let's get into it.
Love is the light. All right, everyone, the moment you've all been waiting for. We are going to be talking to two members of Jesus Chrysler. I am joined tonight by Bacco and Duffy.
All right.
How are you guys?
Duffy's not here, man. This is Travel. Lead guitar.
Oh, yeah. All right. I was told that I would be joined by Duffy the drummer or Shores the bassist, which... but I will settle for Trouble. He is a lead guitar. He is a lead guitar or just the guitarist. He's the, you know.
Hey, I play some guitar too, but yeah, he does the heavy lifting.
You're a bit of a banger though. Yeah.
I'm a banger, you're MASH.
All right. Nice. So, we are here to, what are we here to talk about? What's the new album called, guys?
Deny It All Later, the follow-up album to Make Bold Statements.
Yes, and one of the things that I would like to compliment you guys is I love the dot, dot, dot. And
I knew you were a big fan of that.
Yeah,
yeah, and just like Megadeth titles and things like that. Peace Sells could have been one album, right?
Right.
And then the next album could have been Who's Buying?
See?
And this is kind of the same theme, and I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we took Megadeth, but we wanted to make it bigger.
Yeah, better.
Yeah.
And more dots.
So yeah, for those who don't know, Make Bold Statements, dot, 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 Deny It All Later is the follow-up. So.
That's right.
Yeah. And those scoring at home. That's for you, Vic.
And that, as I understand it, the first album was based on The Elder, and this and this album is the sequel that never actually happened that wraps up all the storylines and gets everything into focus. Am I correct about my notes?
Exactly. We figured if Kiss wasn't going to do The Elder Part 2, it was our job to do it. But securing the rights to the name was a bit of a hassle, so Deny It All Later.
Now, if this doesn't go well and doesn't sell well, will this be referred to as the Jason Bakken Project in the future?
I'm not sure any level of sales could disappoint us compared to other records. So.
Okay, all right. Yeah. And for everybody involved, before we go into this, just so you know, when will this be released? Will it be released at the time of this episode?
It should be out if you're listening to this. It's going to be, I think, the second week in July.
Okay, perfect. And just so you know, why don't you tell everybody how you can listen to this album?
You can find it pretty much anywhere. Streaming is my method of choice, especially Spotify. I've been really cracking down on the back catalog, which I'd like to – I guess I should mention that too. For the first time ever, the entire Jesus Chrysler catalog is available at pretty much every digital outlet, Amazon, iTunes. You can stream. You can download. You can do whatever you want.
This is great news because – up to this point, I mean, the holdouts were the Beatles. You had Kid Rock. He kind of held back for a while. Finally, Def Leppard released their catalog. And finally, the last holdouts of Spotify and streaming, Jesus Chrysler, is available to the world. Thank you very much, guys. We appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Absolutely. So it just made sense, you know. Yeah. We really had all these albums just sitting there.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say, in all seriousness, this is very risky for me. This is essentially the same thing as David Lee Roth evaluating a Eddie Van Halen solo. Somebody, you know, I'm working with Bacco and I'm evaluating and talking about his album. Things could go bad, wouldn't you say?
It could, yeah. I mean, because our relationship is tenuous at moments. I'm not sure how we're doing tonight.
That's what I mean. Like, what's going to happen if I say that some of these tracks are filler?
Oh, God. Have you listened to it?
Yeah.
I have listened to this, and I have to say, like, I obviously had the privilege of listening to, I guess, somewhat finished tracks like a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And certain tracks, I can definitely tell they're punchier than before.
Oh, for sure. So, yeah, we really fine-tuned the mix over the last, you know, 3 years.
This is the Chinese democracy of Jesus Chrysler.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
This is our Chinese democracy. Yeah.
Started in recording in 2008, people.
Wow. This one or last one?
Well, everything, maybe that's, do you want me to just tell a story there real quick?
Please.
Yeah, go for it.
We got it to about 8 or 9 songs, I think it was, and we started to see that we had kind of a light and dark, good, evil kind of thing going. And so we started tossing around the idea of actually doing a double album, which was the plan initially. So Shores joined the band midway through recording. And I think we had finished all the drum tracks and we're just, you know, maybe about 60-70% through the rest of the tracking. And he was getting pretty antsy being new to the band and wanted to get out there. So we decided to release the first part of the record with the idea that we would be following it up within a year. And that came out in 2012. So here we are in 2018, and yeah, we're happy to announce it only took us 3.5 years to get to five and a half years. I can't even do, I'm doing my Minnesota math again, Lewis. But yeah, no, that's kind of what happened. And you know, and then, you know, just also, like, you know, knuckling down and just saying, boom, we got to hit this and get going. I think we actually started demoing, writing songs and doing demos late 2007. Started doing finished tracks probably early 2009. You know, you got to remember, we're just two guys, you know, doing it in a home studio. So it's not like we had any timeline.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the thing I think is interesting is both of your passion projects, which mean things that don't make you money, are done in your basement.
Mm. Right. That's where they're meant to be done.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But no, in all seriousness, though, You sent me over Make Bold Statements a while ago, but I didn't really, you know, because I like to stream everything. Mm-hmm. I didn't really listen to it in the track order because it was just like a Dropbox file at the time. And I was very interested in hearing this album. And the last album, so you're saying that Make Bold Statements is more evil?
No. That one's the lighter of the two. It's got more of the upbeat stuff.
Even though it has tons of stuff about Satan.
Sure, yeah, but you know, it's like, hey, I heart Satan. That's a positive message.
Yeah,
sure,
right.
It is.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. And
oh, devil,
got...
where art thou? Like, you're searching, you know? So, yeah.
No, yeah, and like, Rock and Roll Revival is a great kickoff track. But would you say that the sound between both of these is kind of like Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, kind of scattered, or is it focused, or is it pretty much the same spread over two albums?
I would say it's focused. I mean, at least I know what we were going for, and we spent a lot of time talking about, where to place the sequence and stuff. So, I mean, we tried a couple different sequences here at the end, but it ended up kind of going back to what we talked about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. So,
right. We wrote such a variety of songs, really, during the whole, you know, demoing process, and I don't know, you'll hear the difference when you play them back to back. I mean, it's,
yeah, I've heard both of them. I just kind of get a general vibe on both of kind of that they were made at the same time.
Oh yeah,
very much so.
Pretty much exactly. Just the variety, especially on, you know, Make Bold Statements is, I'd almost say it's, you know, it jumps from all over the place. We've got songs on there that are almost like bluesy country, you know.
I agree. Like, do you mind if we just play, before we go into the new album, can we play just a little bit of Rock and Roll Revival?
Welcome back from the era of the ringside seats. You gotta listen to this man. It's got a crazy beat. That's the problem with problems. No one's looking up for you.
Right, so just before we go on the new album, again, makeboldstatements.... is, you know, you have a bonus edition, correct?
Yeah, the deluxe edition just came out about a week ago.
Yes, and can I share my favorite track on that?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, let's hear
as
it.
As far as the past, you know, you've got Dashboard Jesus, Third Ring of Hell, and then it's all these essential are these demos from both albums? Sort of. There's like 10.
You're talking about the bonus tracks. Yeah, none of those were really finished. They were all written around that time. Yeah, if you got specific questions, I can answer it a little bit better.
Yes, I would just like to play at least the chorus before we're going to do it of When I Dream. When I Dream. Yeah, and I'm just shocked the fact that there's never been a drinking song that has this chorus, because it's so obvious in your face, but it's hilarious, right?
It's a great song. It really should be a bar classic.
A stripper classic.
Fucked up.
Anthem. It's amazing. It's an anthem.
Yes, it definitely is anthemic. I have not written a lot of anthems, so there you go. That's why.
There you go. So if I could talk to Trouble for a moment, Baco.
Okay, I'll step away.
Okay, good. So Trouble, I just want to let you know, how would you describe your guitar style?
Oh, my guitar style? Sure. I'd definitely say it's I have a blues influence and a classic hard rock overall.
So would you say that you have a slop style?
I'd call it grunge.
Okay. No, because I mentioned this Baco earlier, and he's like, I don't know if he's going to like that, but like Slash is considered a slop.
Oh, player. Yeah, absolutely. I would take that as a compliment.
Okay, so you get what I'm talking about. Like, it's not precise.
Well, he took the comparing him to Slash as a compliment. I just said I've never heard the term. You should throw it at him.
Oh, okay. No, it's
have you heard
of anybody
up. Called a slop player before?
I mean, other than like...
In a compliment?
Look it up. It just means that you're not like a precise, like you're not like every single note. It's very, like you said, bluesy. It feels mm-hmm. natural. There's a lot of, and a lot of your songs, you guys actually save the solo for the end, which I think is cool.
Right, yeah. This, you know, we record all the rhythm stuff first, and then solos are always last.
So. He's talking about placement in the track, I think, though. Yeah, we definitely, well, that's one of the beauties of not having to, like, pay for studio time, is that you can kind of fucking do whatever you want. And we tried a lot of different things as far as arrangements on songs and did what we wanted to, you know?
Oh, yeah, we had a lot of fun just, you know, thinking about how... You know, we could do this different here, or move the solo to there, or have a solo go through this whole fucking part, you know.
A lot of it didn't work, but a lot of it did, so.
No, I think that, Trouble, I think your solos a lot of times elevate Baco's suspect songwriting for the songs.
That's my job.
Easy now.
And Cobras and Fire is officially over. So you guys want to move on to the next album?
Yeah, let's talk Deny It All Later.
So let's get to the new album, .. Deny It All Later. And if I could just kick it over to Trouble and ask, you know, I know you guys said that you wrote a lot of these songs in 2008, but I know it sounds like they went over a couple of years, but how does that songwriting process start? Does Baco come up with a riff? Do you come up with a riff? Are the lyrics first? Kind of break that down.
Oh, sure, yeah, well... there'd be lots of times when we'd get together and neither of us have any ideas, and we'd just start from scratch, and mm-hmm. you know, and almost every time that would happen, by the end of the night, we'd have a song. Not always a good song, but you know, nine out of 10 times, I'd say.
That's a pretty good ratio.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But then there were plenty of other times too where, you know, both of us would show up with an idea already and build upon that. So it really was a really fun, you know, collaboration between the two of us.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was very, well, I mean, collaborative to just be redundant. But, I mean, when a lot of times, I mean, Dashboard Jesus from the last record, I just had that little two-note guitar thing at the beginning and nothing else. And I remember Trouble and Duffy, we just squeezed in like an hour and a half session and managed to pump out that most of that song musically in that time. Evil Side, the first track on Deny It All Later, I had just had that little acoustic intro, and that was it.
Oh yeah, and that was one of the first songs we wrote for the whole thing.
Yeah, it was when we were still kind of like building the studio. Even we weren't really equipped to do much more than demo at that time.
Yeah,
and then Treble kind of took that. We built the intro, and I even kind of like recorded it before he showed up, and then he wrote the music for everything else. And if we're talking about that song real quick, I know that like we were up till about 3 a.m, and then you left, and I just kept drinking and wrote all the lyrics for it, and I had kind of like one of those walk of shame feelings the next morning. I did not listen to what I did for about 2 weeks. Yeah. And then when I finally did it, I was like, that's going to be horrible. I mean, I was up till 5 a.m, writing these. They can't be any good. And it's pretty much what's on the record. I don't think I tweaked it too much.
Hear them holler underneath my collar. Cold shit, feeling like a hypocrite. Seems to me wrapped up in my rosary. Broken cross, transfer me, it ain't no loss. Victim, must be me, it sure ain't him. Time down, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. On my knees, praying for your sympathy. Listen, no need for a confession. Possibly, you will say, there's an evil side of me. Come to me, you will be on the evil side of me. Possibly, you will say, there's an evil side of me. Come to me, you will be on the evil side of me.
A lot of late nights.
Yeah, we'd start what about 8 or 9, and then go for about 4 hours typically.
Yeah,
for all four of you?
No, just the writing was typically him and I. And once we got to where we thought we had a shell of a song, or at least something worth putting down on tape, I would sit behind the drum kit and bash through it while he recorded a couple guitar tracks. So we'd have something kind of like a working shell.
Yeah,
very cool.
Because pretty much the most of it was all done just the two of us. Mm-hmm.
The writing, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, all the writing.
Well, I guess O Devil was with all four of us.
That was, yep, that's true.
You know, before we get on to the next track, why don't you kind of tell me, I mean, like I said, the most influential band of the last 20 years. Now, I don't think there's ever been a band that all four members, it's Duffy, Shores, Treble, and Bocco. Was that a plan for everybody to have just one name like Cher and Sting?
Yes.
Yeah, it was kind of a band theme, you know. They basically, have always had that. Even before I was in the band, that was just the way it was, you know.
Now, has there ever been a band in history that just had one name for each member?
Yeah, shit.
I can't think of any.
Oh, there's one. Fuck, who is it?
Is there?
Even those that share the name, like if it's the Ramones.
Joey from Rock Strikes 10 has got to know somebody. Yeah, that. You know, where they're basically, probably not the way you're talking. It's usually like the Ramones, Joey Ramone, but it's
right. And there's like something that Donna's or whatever like that. So it's not one name. So again, well done, revolutionary. Just
one of the many groundbreaking things. We influence people by showing them what they don't want to do.
Yes. And with the name Jesus Chrysler, just like the name Cobras and Fire, did you ever give it second thoughts?
I didn't. We were called Bloody Bedsheets, and we had a band meeting, and it was like these guys wanted to change the name for some reason. And I remember, like, I talked to our drummer at the time, Shags, and I just said he had mentioned the name Jesus Chrysler, and I'm like, fuck, I wish you would have said that before we picked Bloody Bedsheets. So once we decided to change it, my mind was pretty well set that it was going to be that.
No, it's a great pun. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of in the same era as like a Nerf Herder and stuff like that, right? Or a Weezer, that kind of.
Sure, yeah. You know, I thought it captured the band decently. It's got, we do things tongue in cheek at times. I mean, we take the music pretty serious. A lot of the topics we get into are can be heavy. But as far if you watched any of our videos or anything, the way we play and stuff, it is kind of loose as far as having fun.
So can you guys kind of break down that 50-city U.S. tour you did back in 2000?
Trouble, you got this one.
Yeah. Well, it was. It all happened so fast, man. Mm-hmm.
A lot of ladies.
Yeah.
A lot of lot of crime.
Yep.
A lot of crack babies.
Oh my god.
So let's talk about the track Thin. What is this all about? Going to the gym? What's going on?
Well, topically, it is about my love for all things reality television and TV shows like The Voice, American Idol, and how they basically just offer so much to American culture.
Sure.
You know, at least in the sense of like magazine racks at grocery stores. If that's a sign of cultural importance, then those are the places you would go. But no, yeah, the line is, you know, get a new act because you're wearing thin. You know, I just, shows like American Idol had a pretty damaging role on popular music in general. It was one of the first steps that I can think of in devaluing the importance of music and art in our life. And I think that's fucked up. So I wrote a song about it. But the music, I remember we were fucking around. Trouble wrote all the music on this one.
Really? And,
I kind of Ozzy'd the riff for him that day, because we do a lot of things where it's almost like themes, like, you know, when we don't have an idea, why don't we pull out the acoustics? Why don't we try different tuning? Let's try starting the song with bass just to kind of get things moving, right? And I was like, why don't we do something with a lot of pull-offs? But, you know, that was really all it was. And then he, you know, had his guitar out and he started kind of fucking around. And
yeah, it didn't sound like that. Yeah, it sounded like what you hear on the album.
Yeah.
After some tweaks. But Ben-a-lan-a-lan-a-lan. Yeah. But that's I speak Baco's language, you know. He goes Ben-a-lan-a-lan-a-lan, and then I fine tune it and it all works out. Man.
Yeah. And the guitar on this, I believe, is the actual demo recording.
Is that? No, I think we did that with Testify.
Yeah, I thought we did it with this one too.
No, I think we recorded that one clean.
Okay.
Creative differences.
Well,
one of us is right and one of us is wrong. There is no good. I can pull it up. I'm just going to go with Treble on this one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I recorded that one.
Yes, for this one, this is a standout for me. And one of the reasons is, you know, everybody hears different stuff. Not that it sounds exactly like Motorhead, but it has a kind of attitude to it.
Oh, sure.
Yes? Yeah. Okay.
For sure. All right.
I didn't know if I was out of it completely as far as throwing it out there. But yeah, just the riff. Again, another great solo by you, Treble. No bullshit.
Thank you.
Yeah, so before we go to the next track, Up to Me, quick question. So, Treble, Did you meet Baco the same I did, which was on the site Guys That Like Kiss in a Heterosexual Way.com?
No, it was the guys who like Kiss in a Gay Way.com.
Oh, like, excellent. All right. Well, at least it's
I was
it
in
varied.
Both groups.
Yeah, fair and balanced, like Fox News. It's good. All right. Well, okay, so you did not meet him online. He is he worked with you at the printing factory, or how'd you guys meet?
No, actually, we just met through music. I was in a different band called Distant Relatives of God with Duffy.
What was it called again?
Distant Relatives of God.
Distant Relatives of God. That rolls off a ton.
Okay. Yeah, really. Yeah, but it was funny when we played shows together because it was, you know, Jesus Chrysler and Distant Relatives of God.
Yeah. It's a bill made in heaven.
Yeah. And we played quite a few shows together over, a couple of years. And But that project actually broke up that I was in. And
Was Mike Portnoy in it?
Briefly, yeah.
Okay, that's good. Supergroup.
But it just happened to be that they were looking for a guitar player at the same time, and we kept in touch. Buck and I, met, obviously, like I said, just playing shows together. We got along, and we kept in touch. He
was much better than our guitar player, and I was like, it's too bad he's in this band. Otherwise, I'd shit-can the idiot we got and ask him to join. But it all worked out.
Yeah. Well,
No,
he called me up, and he told me I had to audition and everything. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Okay. True story, yeah. It was Shags, I had a history of picking the first guy. And so Shags, our drummer at the time, was like, we're doing auditions.
So I heard that it was an ad in the Village Voice and that you guys were playing Deuce and he had to do a solo on top of it. Is that accurate?
Yeah, he came in after Bob Kulick.
Is that when Bob Kulick had hair help?
Yeah.
The only reason I got the part is because Baco hates Bob Kulick. Oh, I'm kidding.
I understand.
He doesn't hate Kulick. He just...
No,
likes me
I totally
more.
Understand. That's basically a theme in the music industry. So let's go to Up to Me.
I quit high school and had a bunch of babies just getting high and living low. Working the drive-thru, ain't no way to pick up ladies. Somehow I'm still getting my pole. 8 hours on my feet, skin coated with grease. Wake up, work a double shift. There's a good chance I'll quit. Walk out and throw a fit. Tell the boss I'm sick of this shit. When my brother gets home, hope it's not too late. I need a lift to the liquor store. If it were all
was a real fun song to write. You know, it's got a lot of kind of raunchy guitar riffs, I'd say, you know, a lot of cool string bending, and it's a pretty heavy song, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of a song about being a loser, you know. It's just like, you know, if it were up to me, everything would be my way, man. But if you listen to the words, you'll kind of get it. It's
I like the opening line. I quit high school and had a bunch of babies. It kind of sets the tone for the whole thing, and it's a guy who's complaining about his parents yelling at him when he's 25.
Yeah, he needs a lift to the liquor store.
Yeah,
you know,
man, I'm so sick of this shit. I'm gonna quit my job. Can someone give me a ride to the liquor store? And I don't remember what inspired me lyrically, but it was story time with Baco on this one.
Well, sure. I mean, it sounds like again, you guys were before your time. This could have been written. You could come up with a bullshit story. You could say this is written about that guy that had to go and get kicked out of his house in court.
Yeah, that's what it's about, that recent thing.
Oh, right. See, look at that. Once again.
Yeah, no shit. They should have been playing that on all the news coverage. If it were up to me.
Seriously. It would have been like the soundtrack.
I wouldn't have to move out of my parents' fucking house.
Yeah.
See? I'm here. See, next interview you do with Rolling Stone, just come up, just use these stories I'm giving you as the fake stories of how the song is written. Because
yeah, we're actually doing that next, by the way. I've already kind of had to text him back and forth and say, not now, okay? We are busy.
Well, just, you know, there's a difference between Rolling Stone, the magazine, and RollingStone.com. They'll interview anybody. But thank you. congratulations.
I just give you a compliment and then you just take a big old dump on us.
My God, this is the part of the album that is absolutely the peak of songwriting and album titles, and that is Stank Butt. Please elaborate on this song.
Well, this was definitely a late night, all night writing session. We got shit faced. And the song really reflects that. Everything about it, it's a dirty, grungy, bluesy, heavy, riffy song. It just sounds like...
It sounds like you're sweating, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hot, it's sweaty, it's boozy, it's a little sloppy. Baco puked the next day. I definitely puked the next day.
It's beautiful. What year was this?
It would have been in that whole, like, all the writing was done between, I think, about 2008, 2010.
So, okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, but we were up all night on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was now in no condition to be driving anywhere.
That wasn't the night that you stayed and you woke up with 160 texts from your gal, was it?
Well, yes.
That was
the one.
You got drunk and got in a text fight with her and passed out.
Yeah, wrote a kick-ass song, though.
Yeah, whatever, man. Yeah, the lyrics are literally about being hungover. And that's all we were going for there. I lifted a little bit of melody from the Foo Fighters for the intro. Hopefully they don't hear it and sue for the money that I've made off it.
Sure. And I got to go back to Treble on this. I have to compliment you also, Treble, because back in 2008, to receive 160 text messages... That had to be an amazingly angry woman, because that's on a flip phone where you're using those buttons and all this shit. You cannot.
For sure.
That
is,
it was okay. Analog. It was good stuff.
Yeah, analog style. But, yeah.
It was.
Once this Budweiser sponsorship pulls through, though, I'll be able to pay for that.
Yeah. I forgot about that. It was like the texting was a little more expensive back then, too.
Oh, yeah. Each one of those cost 5 cents or something. They're the plans. My God, so well done, Treble. Making a girl go so crazy you get 160 texts. Now that is a man. Come on.
Yeah.
Give it up.
Right on.
Thank you.
Stank Butt.
Sweat is flowing from every pore. It's 100 degrees in the shade. Drink too much, I'll drink some more until they tell me I can't play.
Song, and that is the amazingly titled Blow. Is this a play-by-play of the Johnny Depp classic?
That's fair.
It is. It's about cocaine. What do you want?
It is. Treble. How did this come about? Did you have like the baseline written, and we built around it after
that?
Yeah,
we actually, that was one of the ones where we started with just noodling around on bass and the whole thing kind of.
And Duffy was there at this point when
Duffy was part of writing this one. Yep.
And there's that kind of bridge piece between the bulk of the song. Where it's kind of a combination of an acoustic and electric thing, and that was a little piece I had laying around for quite a while. We tried fitting that in, and it fit good. And then you kind of came up with the ending too.
Call, so. And then we decided to drop it down like a full step. I think
that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like super heavy, real heavy.
But being as I've never done cocaine, I thought I was the best person to write the lyrics about it. So,
excellent. Yes.
But I did see the Johnny Depp movie Blow. No, I remember Duffy was really excited that I wanted to write a song called Blow. I don't remember why, but he was like, that's a great title.
Yeah, and he's not a cokehead either, so, you know.
So basically, this is a cokehead song by people that have never done cocaine.
I think Duffy's at least done it.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, Treble,
good.
You've done coke, yeah?
I sense a little bit of cocaine in Duffy's drum playing, so that's good.
It might be Ritalin.
Feels good to me. The blood flows right through.
You start a band and you call it Jesus Chrysler and you get everybody together and you actually say, okay, we are going to go and try to play shows. And I've always been, you know, the fact that you're dedicating your time to this and you know that maybe you're not going to make much money on it and everything like that, but you're doing it out of passion. How do you solicit and start contacting clubs to actually get you to get in there to play? This is a serious question.
Yeah, it sucks. It's probably a little easier now with everything connected online. It might be a lot easier to get blown off, though. I don't know. Treble, what do you got?
Yeah, it's a lot of, you know, door knocking, really. Just, you know, with making phone calls and, like, just other bands. And
yeah, making friendships. Yeah. You know, because I don't know what it – I know that the scene in the Twin Cities at the time was very much the guy who would book the bands would actually only book one band, and then he would say, you fill the night. We need three more bands. Which is, to me, kind of a shitty way and why the music scene kind of sucked around here. But so, yeah, you would network a little bit. We rehearsed at a place called Cooler Sound, which had like 30 other bands. I mean, about 28 of them were... And then there was us and this girl singer band. But no, so no, we actually got to hang out and meet a lot of bands. We did a lot of kind of heavy... kind of thrashy metal shows as we were almost like the lighter act in the middle of the day of the show or something.
Metal Fest.
Yeah, Metal Fest.
That was a good one.
And Jackson, what was the Jackson Mille Lacs thing called?
That was a different Metal Fest.
Yeah. We did a lot of Metal Fests. They were called something, yeah.
Yeah. That was fun, though.
So what about, but in the beginning, was there any... pay to play bullshit at the club, like
nothing like that. But there was a lot of getting stiffed. I mean, and it's kind of sad that I mean we did a show, our first club show ever. This had just been right before Treble joined. We were only guaranteed one tap beer for each member of the band, and they stiffed us on that. And they asked us to play a double set, and it was Easter Sunday.
So you're telling me that you and Anvil have the same manager.
Pretty much, yeah. I'm telling you, there's no extent that people will go to fuck over a musician.
Think of that, though. one tap beer.
Yes, that, and with, there was only we were a three piece at the time.
Yeah,
three. Okay, so that is that, maybe a dollar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now it probably would have been $1.50 if it was the kind of beer that I like.
I was going to say on the flip side of that, we did get paid in all you can drink beer plenty of times too.
Yeah, there is. That's true. There's been times where we played a show with maybe six people all night in the bar. You know, basically.
They lost money on us.
Yeah. I mean, every band has stories like that. You know, if you didn't get out there and play to nobody, you never really were playing.
See, that's always dangerous though, because it's like as soon as they do that, they turn on the tap that way. It's kind of like you're at the old country buffet, and you're like, I need to get my value, like, right?
Yeah. You know what? I know I learned my lesson at least once. Mm. You?
Oh yeah. Well, you see, you look at photos of our gig. You know, at those types of gigs, like just behind the amps, there's like stacks of beers.
Yeah. You know, for the most part, we kept it in check. Yeah. There was a couple disasters that you kind of wake up and go, you know, that's not how you do it. You know, you party after the show. So, you know, I mean, I think I could have two beers a set if we were doing a three set night and not have to worry about anything. But and then I could, you know, do what I wanted afterwards.
All right, so I'm going to go more in depth in a little bit about that, because I do have some questions about this. I'm always fascinated about just getting out and getting in any club and how that progress works. So let's go to the next track, and that's track six, Swim Fin.
It's called Swim the Witch.
Well, then you are a bad typer, because I have your file here, and it says capital S-W-I-M, capital F-I-N. Swim Fin.
Hopefully that gets corrected before the album's released. But yeah.
Can you imagine that? It's a hilarious title, though.
Oh, yeah, Swim Fin, because it's the finished version of that song. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of working titles.
Yeah, they were much more ridiculous, but...
All right.
There's like a song called "Something About My Dehumidifier Being Awesome." I think you named that one.
That was me, yeah. Because we didn't have a title for that. Was fuck. You're gonna have to edit this out.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been Stank, but honestly, but
no.
God, it really doesn't matter that. But no, when I was going back and trying to pick out tracks for the deluxe edition of Make Bold Statements, I came across just a ton of. I don't even remember. I was like, "What the hell song is this?" There's even some like. You know, racially offensive things in there that I'm definitely not going to say. That look, they were never meant to be see the light of day. They were kind of working title. But I was thinking about. Remember, we were kind of coming up with the album title. Remember, Stool Sample was one of the first like ideas we wrote on the board. I don't remember any other one off the top of my head.
I remember telling you that was a shitty idea.
Yeah. there's the trouble, Joe.
Nice.
Swim the Witch was a term that I found, you know, kind of researching a little bit, just reading about the Salem witch trials and stuff like that, in which was the case was you would take somebody who was accused as a witch, and if you tied their right wrist to their left ankle and their left wrist to the right ankle, and then you'd throw them in the water, and if they managed to, you know, not drown, they were a witch, and if they died, they were innocent. And it just kind of showed you kind of this... there's no win situation, and it was also around the time that hurricane kind of wiped out New Orleans, and Kanye West talked about George Bush not liking black people, and we also had a big flood come through the Midwest that affected a far greater population and received almost none of the coverage. And I just thought about how, like, you know, a politician sometimes it's like, Not to defend them too much, but, you know, what do you expect this guy to do? It's a freaking hurricane. And I know there was some serious things going on there. I don't want to minimize some of the things that people were going through, but that's what it came through. And so the song, you know, there's a line in there, call me when the levee is breached, we can turn the roof of my house into a beach. And it's just kind of like talking about, you know, just more or less kind of taking it easy and realizing that a major weather storm is not necessarily something you want to turn political. You just want to get in there and help people out. But the music is... one of my favorite riffs that Treble ever wrote. That I don't know.
Speaking his language there again.
Yeah, and I Well, I think you came up with without me Ozzy-ing it for you, but
yeah, but you do a good job. With
that now I'm Beavis and Butthead in it.
Yeah,
da, 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 da.
Yeah, it's got a Beavis and Butthead.
I love that song. I remember it took me a long time to write lyrics for it. It was just we basically had the entire song recorded, and I couldn't find my voice for it for a little bit. But once I did, I do think overall that song knocks it out of the park.
I ain't crazy about the mess that you're leaving me. Brainwashed as a baby, they couldn't bring you back around. Left alone with your own device, something in your head just ain't right. You feel the aftershock. Call me at the moment that the levee is breached. We can turn the roof on our house into a beach. Guilty from the moment that the left hit the right. We can swim the wish when the floodwaters rise.
That's a heavy riffer, and that one we tuned down for too. So
yeah, that was extra. Tuned down day.
Yeah, that was extra crunchy.
Yeah,
you have some troubles with different venues not paying you only in beer, not paying you in beer, things like that. But how many shows approximately over? Because you guys were active from like the first show was what, 99, 2000.
Yeah, if you want to count the Bloody Bedsheet years, our shirts say established 98 because it was myself and Shags from the beginning. You know, when Treble joined, it was also kind of a shift. We were, you know, going to do kind of a combo thing where we were also trying to throw in, cover shows.
But that's, you're doing covers too.
Well, right. Some prior, you know, it actually took us about a year, if I recall, to actually get to where we had a cohesive band that could play, you know, 50, 60 songs. But we were like, shit, you know, we got all this gear and we're not making any money. Let's try that.
It was good. We got an agent and we started gigging a lot doing that. And I mean, it was cool because people knew like Chrysler is going to come and fucking tear it up. And we're not just like a pussy cover band. Like we melted faces, you know?
So you were still called Jesus Chrysler when you were doing covers?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we kind of had our own edge on it.
And we definitely played a lot of covers that we threw our own kind of slant on. We still did the occasional original show where you're doing like a 40-minute set on a Tuesday night. But we were actually starting to pay bills, you know, with weekend shows at bars that like would just feature kind of cover music. So
Doc's Landing,
Boondocks.
Oh yeah, the Boondocks.
A lot of Docs, huh? JJ's. Trying to think. Well, and then anytime we went back to Owatonna, we pretty much blew shit up. But that's just because it's my hometown. I had a lot of friends down there.
Okay, so with the title Jesus Chrysler, what were there? Was there a point later on we were only playing your originals, or was it all as covers and some of your stuff?
I think we're at that point now.
We did make that transition back full circle to just playing originals.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, after Shores came back, our first shows were all just. Featuring a lot of the stuff off of Make Bold for the first time. Treble and I wanted to get out and play it. Shores kind of tweaked our arm a little bit to get us back into doing covers. And again, it pays okay, but it's a bit of a soul-sucking experience.
Well, you're not a big fan of covers to begin with, so I'm assuming that you guys.
Well, I'm not. I've never had a problem with cover bands. I've enjoyed a lot of cover bands over the years. I don't like a band that does a tribute gig as their full-time thing. You know, like I'm a Kiss tribute, or I'm a Motley Crue tribute. To me, a tribute's like a one-time thing. But I've never had a problem with a good cover band that can play a lot of stuff, or like, you know, someone that was like a genre-type tribute, like disco music or something. If you're good and you have fun and people are enjoying it, you know, whatever. I mean, I can have a few beers and enjoy pretty much any kind of band. When you do it as a musician and you're also writing your own music, it does kind of tear at you a little bit, with that, you know, this is how you get people out there. It's harder to get them to pay attention, you know, on, like I said, on Tuesday night at 11 o'clock at a bar in downtown Minneapolis.
So you would say it's better on Thursday?
Yeah, you know what, Thursday is the prime night. Yeah, you get ready for the weekend. It's always better when you got a headliner that can draw.
I remember at some point on the show you mentioned something, and you know, you got bands like the Rock and Roll Residency in Nashville that, you know, end up being Gene Simmons' backup band. That's an exception to the rule. But you said at some point, unless you're going to go full tilt, quit your job, do everything else, just be the best cover band you can be in town.
That's kind of, yeah. Yeah. Well, first of all, do what you want to do. But yeah, if you're not going to basically say no wife, no kids, I'm not going to put myself in a financial situation where I have credit card debt, car payments. You need to be in a city like Los Angeles, Nashville, Chicago, New York. If you're not willing to do that, then yeah, you know what? Get your full-time job, get your finances in order, become really good at what you're at, and then just, yeah, be the best goddamn cover bar in town. So I found I came across that thought a little late in my life. So,
trouble your thoughts?
Yeah.
I just opened a beer.
Yeah.
Are you for or against that statement?
Oh, I actually agree with pretty much everything Baco just said about it. I mean, it's fun, but it is soul-sucking at the same time. Like, you know, the whole cover band thing, that's what we're saying, right?
Well, I mean, and then like, if you're not willing to commit full on, basically.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, again, it's easy to say now. You know, I mean, it wasn't easy to make that decision, but that's kind of the point. When you're 20 and you're unattached and you don't have debt, it's not easy to just pack up and move away from your family and your friends and just dive into it. But that the people that succeed, that's what they do.
Right. You got to go all in. No,
yeah,
other job.
You don't make it
no
big living in your mom's, you know, house in Medford.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if you're going to try to be just an artist and not do the cover band thing and make money, like, seriously, good luck.
But honestly, things have changed so much with that too. I'm not sure what the fucking answer is now. Just become Justin Bieber and hope Usher finds you.
Now it begins. Back of the room lit by neon lights. Still late walking over time. What I believe in is what I bring. So sorry about the shape I'm in. My hands are gritty and my eyes seem just a bit set in. But I'm alive tonight.
We wanted this to be the last song on the record just because of the name.
Just to confuse people. That's good.
Yeah.
Like it should be an opening track, right?
Well,
we went back and forth on that too, because the evil side, you know, is the lead track for the evil side of the double album. But
I forgot to mention we wanted Evil Side to be 6 minutes and 66 seconds long.
Ooh,
and
that's too long.
When we got back, you know, to where we're actually doing the final mix, it was like shit. I mean, I really would have to just that whole drone. I would have to like throw another 30 seconds of that on there. I'm like, that's
it was a bit ridiculous.
I love the idea of ending a record with a song called "Now It Begins." It's just not a great record closer.
Gotcha. It just fades out too when you hear it. It just fades.
Yeah,
it just keeps going and going.
So, of these tracks so far, which ones are filler?
Trouble?
Hey, did I mention this podcast or this band was sponsored by Budweiser tonight? Cold, crisp, beautiful Budweiser.
Excellent.
Okay, that's his answer to filler. Apparently the filler on the record is Budweiser.
Do you know what filler is, Trouble? It's not things that fill you up.
Like, oh, man.
It actually is a term. It's a term. Like, I'm teaching a lot of stuff tonight. Slop guitar player.
Tonight.
Filler. Banger.
I've heard of filler. I've heard of bangers, too, yeah. But we got that from our boy, Sean McCoy.
This album
That's
is
right. The first time I heard that.
All killer, no filler.
There you go. Okay, excellent. Coming up right now is my... I'm not sure if it's my favorite song on the record, but it's my favorite chorus because it is so ridiculous. Was it Swing on My Axe? Is that the chorus?
Spit
the
on lyrics? Me. Yeah. Spit on me.
Take a swing on my axe, yeah.
The track Spit on Me, if there is a misogyny alert, we have to play it right now.
Sit back, relax, take a swing on my axe. Now we're chopping wood and you spit on me. Sit back, relax, take a swing on my axe. Now we're chopping wood and you spit on me.
It is just everything you'd want to have in an offensive song, but the chorus is amazing. And I have to say too, I'm not even sure if it's Kiss like or just a hooky ass chorus, but I'm going to go back on that real quick. For somebody that's such has a Kiss obsession as Baco does, and what's your band Trouble? Are you in there too, or is it just like another band for you?
Yeah, I'm definitely not a huge Kiss head like Baco is. Not even close. He's rubbed off on me as far as that's concerned. I've become more of a Kiss fan just by being around him.
Osmosis.
Okay. Can you imagine that? Yeah.
But I guess my point of saying that is that I was expecting, before I heard a single track by your band Baco, to hear a bunch of Kiss like songs, and to the whole band's as a compliment, there is very little of that here, in a good way.
Well, I have other influences.
I know. I'm just saying, but you would think that there would be, at least be some aping, whatever. A lot of bands do that, you know. They wear their influences in their sleeve, and there's everything of these songs is a nice blend of all bands.
Well, thank you very much. We're taking rock and roll to the 22nd century.
Again, very influential.
Yeah. Spit on Me.
So, yeah, talk about it.
Oh, man. It's just a dirty, raunchy guitar riff.
I actually struggled with keeping this on the record because it's difficult to take myself serious listening to myself sing this thing. But we actually got... Remember, this is the night Jade got Hives. And we had like a little 13-inch TV with a built-in VCR, and we had it watching porn. And my wife Amy came down with like, Jade's got Hives. Oh my God, what the hell are you guys watching? Just like two dudes with guitars staring at this tiny television with some fucking, you know, I don't know, like some of those bootleg Tracy Lords movie or something.
Oh, good Lord. what is that move? I think that's only in porn is they move when they spit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the song literally is about that, spitting on a dick, you know.
Yes.
There's no subtle message like you go from swim to witch, which is like a metaphor. For let's try to look at like how this is a lost situation too. The song Spit on Me is about spitting on me. The music is amazing on this.
Yes, that's the whole thing. Is like this is your burn bitch burn of the album.
Yeah, yeah. Put your log in your fireplace.
It's a
and features
song.
A little bit of lead guitar for me on this one. This is
I really love you, baby, but you don't mean shit to me.
I got to tell you, the first time I heard this album front to back, this is the chorus that stuck in my head. So I'm glad you did not cut it. I know it's ridiculous and over the top and all that stuff, but that's a hooky ass chorus.
Spit on me!
Of the, over the course when you guys were active, cover band, doing originals, things like that, how many shows would you say you did in total? And were they all on the weekend? It doesn't sound like they were on the weekends. So you guys all fit them in whenever.
Cover shows are typically Friday, Saturday night. Original shows were all over the place.
Yeah, we play, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
I mean, there's a list, actually, of most of them. But yeah, I mean, over 100 shows over the course of, I don't know, 4 or 5 years.
Rarely a Sunday.
Yeah, not too many Sundays.
Okay. So would you say you did 100 shows?
Oh, yeah.
Between 100 and 150. I mean, it's over 100, but. Yeah.
Definitely over 100.
Now, did you ever play a parking lot outside of a fest where they had that one band, you know, the band that people walk by when they actually go to the actual fest that's playing out there at like 6.
Oh yeah,
the
we played a hog fest. It was a
that's what I was looking for.
Yeah, we were in a parking lot of a biker bar bike shop.
Yeah, that was awesome actually. Stage was the, you know, like a truck thing.
It was like a hay trailer.
Yeah, some kind of truck thing. It was awesome, except for where, you know, the bass player was standing. It was like a 45-degree angle. And Shags was like hanging off the back of that deal.
Yeah, it was a rickety night. But we've done, that's definitely one that kind of sticks out as kind of an oddball. And like the bikers would come up and they would be burning their back tire until it popped right in front of the stage.
Yeah.
And then they'd walk it away and somebody else would come up and do it. And apparently that was like applauding.
Yeah, they thought
were you required to play Ted Nugent that night?
We probably played Cat Scratch Fever that night. Yeah, we did the Pantera version though.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's
just
good.
Just to better about ourselves.
That's cool. So any other gigs? I know you played, you mentioned you played what's the back door of the 11th Avenue?
Oh, First Avenue. Yeah, we played 7th Street entry. Patti Smith was headlining the main room, and they did like a random draw for all the local bands, and we actually got the headline and actually benefited because that was the after her show was done. So all these people walked over and watched us. And
oh, very cool. So what's any other specific, like, that was cool.
What about we did a New Year's gig at the only bar with nobody in it, and one of the employees got drunk and started throwing pepperoni at us, and oh yeah, and like they had us turned down to where I could literally hear the picks hitting my string over the guitar coming through the amp.
It was like they didn't want us there.
Yeah, it was like, it was, I don't know, why did you book us? They ended up paying us. They gave us a check signed to Jesus Christ or like...
Yeah, $600.
Okay.
You never did Jesus Christ or LLC or anything?
Yeah. Our manager was supposed to handle this stuff at the time. It was the first... This place was just kind of goofy and stupid. They didn't want to be there. They actually asked us to stop at midnight so they could watch the ball drop.
Say, yeah, they wanted to watch the ball drop on TV instead of listening to us play the Happy New Year fucking thing.
And even the sound guy, when we walked in, he like warned us. He's like, I'm going to tell you right now, they're going to ask you to turn down. We hadn't even unloaded.
Yep. Yeah, that was a good sign.
Oh, my God.
But that was the worst gig ever, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the only time it's ever been that bad.
No. Yeah, we're only telling about all the nightmare shows, but they're the funniest.
That's true.
Yeah, well, sure. And I just said the best part of that story is the fact that the check was written out to Jesus Christ. Now, can you imagine that you actually went to form a corporation and you went to apply for Jesus Chrysler LLC and it was already taken?
Yeah, that would suck.
Who the hell is name in there?
Julian Gill squatting on it.
Did you buy JesusChrysler.com?
We did. Oh, actually, .net. And someone was squatting on that and never used it.
Somebody was actually on the .com?
Yeah, and you went to it and all it said was Jesus Chrysler is coming. And that was it. There was no info. You have no idea even if it was a band. It was just, that's all it said. It could have been some weirdo.
Ooh, that goes into the next thing. Have you ever had any letters from or to that really weird, evil version of Jesus Chrysler that's on Spotify?
No. We've gotten some mail from extremists. You know, like the email is like all giant letters talking, and then it's like, you know, condemning us to hell or telling us to repent or something like that. Yeah. But
see, that's just it. The beauty of having a name like Jesus Christ is people either think that we're Christian band or that we're Satan worshipers. So we get hate from both sides, really. We'll get like we got that tweet once that was like, it just literally only said, it was from like a death metal band, and all it said was "fuck your god."
Yeah, that's right.
Like they went out of their way to tell us that they hate us because we're Christian, but we're not. So
yeah,
whatever.
And the dumbest Christians think we're Christian.
Yeah.
So, but my question is like, do you know where that band is even from? Because first time I looked you up on anything like on YouTube, I accidentally got that. There's a weird ass disgusting band.
Are you talking about? I think it's like Jesus Christ or Suicide, right? That's who you're referring to.
No, it's called Jesus Chrysler. That's it.
Are you sure? It's the one with the Z though, like Jesus. See, now there's been a few that have popped up the last couple of years.
Oh, okay. Well, this one is just straight up your name, so maybe you need to look into that. But but it's go look at yourself on Spotify.
Oh, is it the one with the elk? Done. That's the new one. I haven't checked them out. Yeah.
Yes, the elk. Those guys are evil.
Yeah, I don't know much about them other than that. Like, apparently they don't know how to use Google.
Yeah. It's,
what do you guys want to call our band? Let's not check the internet.
Well, it's kind of like maybe you'll just have to add BC at the end of yours, like Ghost.
Well, yeah, we should have done something like that. We'd call it Jesus Christ or Official.
Yes.
We definitely have a big enough of a web presence that if they made any effort at all, they would have seen that it existed.
Cool. So let's talk about Kill Your Idol. You had to kill your idol.
Probably the first song I ever wrote. This one goes back to my college days. And I demoed it with a friend in Owatonna. Well, demoed it is a strong term. We recorded it with his boombox. And I don't know, I just kind of sat on it for a long time. And digging through some ideas, I realized I like the song a lot. It's pretty down and dirty. There's not a lot to it. It's a quick hitter, about 2.5 minutes. I think on this one I recorded all the guitars and just brought treble into... put a tasty lead on it.
Sounds about right.
Cool. Anything else you want to say about that one, Baco?
I got the title from a Rolling Stone picture I saw of Axl Rose. He was wearing a t-shirt that said Kill Your Idol and had a picture of Jesus on it. And I, for whatever reason, I thought it was a good song title. Took it from there.
No, that's perfect. I mean, they all say that... no, that's perfect. I mean, they all say good artists create, great artists steal. So well done.
Thanks. Yeah, whoever came up with that shirt, you're a big influence on me.
All right, well, moving on. We're on track 10, and that is Where Are You Now? Left here to fight for myself, girl, you know. From the day that we first talked, I held the flag, not knowing all the things you never had. Could it stop you from believing I'm alive? I love it when there's nothing.
Down. song about basically breakup and dealing with the, you know, the reality that the person that you thought was always going to be there for you is not only not going to be there, but they're out of your life altogether. And I'll tell you, if for any budding songwriters listening, that's a great sentiment to write about when you're happily married. I remember playing this for my wife, and she's like, "What the hell are you doing?" And I was like, "I'm not literally, you know, I'm touching on a feeling that I remember." You know what I mean? So it features me on keyboards.
Ooh, nice! I didn't know that was you on it. See, I completely mistook the song for just simply singing about when your GPS breaks.
That's what it's about now.
Okay, good. That's what you tell your wife. That's my point. All right. Anyway,
any thoughts on this one, Trouble? I mean, it's a great lead on this one.
Another one of those fun, you know, collaborations between us where we really just knuckled down and, you know, created a killer song.
But with that said, I mean, would you say percentage wise that, like, you, Trouble, you come up with this riff? Because there are some great riffs on both of these last, both this album and the previous, that I would put it up to, you know, no bullshit. Like, these could be on. The riffs you guys came up with, if they were on bands that you like, you would be like, "That's a great fucking riff." Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's
so. My question is: did a lot of these songs? What percentage of the songs were riff based versus sitting down and hashing out the ideas?
I think
that's a good question.
Yeah, more of them are, I think, riff based. Really, you know, yep. A lot of the times the silly songs like "Spit on Me," that was kind of like the riff. And the whole theme of it just worked, you know. But a lot of times we just come up with the music, you know, and just come up with killer riffs. And
I mean, for the most part, the lyrics and melody was my role. That's not entirely, that's not 100%. I mean, Apricots Tomorrow was a complete song that you brought,
right.
Everything from lyrics to melody to the music. I think this album has a heavier percentage of guitar parts and music that Trouble wrote than the first one. I would say this one's probably about, I don't know, 60-40, 70-30, somewhere like that. There's, I mean, like, Kill Your Idol, I wrote pretty much all of it. I think Where Are You Now, the body of the song was musically written by me, and he came in and kind of added some color. But we're talking about so many of these songs that were, you know, it was, we started with a riff, and then, you know, it was a riff typically he came up with, you know. There's a couple examples where I had a small riff or a small idea, and then it just took off from there with him. But, you know, this one is more guitar heavy too, and I think that's kind of a testament to him. So,
yeah, this album, the Deny It All Later album, really is, yeah, it, like Vago said, super guitar heavy, and, again, that's just the way it worked out as mm-hmm. far as the arrangement of them, because these were all written at the same time, you know, make both statements.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we could have picked different songs and the ratio would have been a little different. It's just the way it worked out. We decided pretty early on, as I recall, that we worked really well together, that we just stopped worrying about, there was no scorekeeping or anything like that. It was like it was either good or bad.
We always had that dynamic, too, where we're not really afraid to tell one another if something sucks.
Yeah. So. Fortunately, we never had to deal with hurt feelings. When someone's idea didn't work, we just kind of moved on.
Very cool. And from a non-musician and just an idiot that likes to talk on the microphone about music, a great riff has always fascinated me as far as how it's made and how easy it can be. Like, some of the greatest riffs are very easy, I guess, to play. But, like, how does that even, like, how do you just sit down and just fuck around on your guitar and end up with something that you're like, okay, that was good.
I think you just described how.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. There's no magic formula. You just spend time at it. You know, you sit down, you get together, you have a good time with your friends, and you know.
So somebody at one point just says, that was good. Stop. Do that again.
Yep.
Essentially.
Yeah. Yep. When we, with the two of us, yeah. I mean, but there's times that Treble brought an idea too, like, you know, or I had something that was like, you know, the skeleton of something, you know, and then we took it from there. But, you know, honestly, a lot of this record and the last one was written with like two guys going, what are we going to do tonight?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And then I remember when we tried to bring other people in too, they were like, yeah, we'll see how it goes. Like, I don't think you understand. We're not leaving until there's something recorded.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, like, I don't care if it's good or bad. We're getting something fucking accomplished tonight.
Yeah, there's no see how it goes.
Once we got moving, we were like, there's no, tonight we're, I mean, again, some of the songs aren't going to ever see the light of day, but for the most part, what you hear is what we got.
Yeah, that leads in perfectly to my favorite song on the album, one I've heard in, I guess, different versions over the years. Would you say that, like, the at least how it was produced?
Maybe a little bit. This one was mastered pretty early on. There's been some tweaking a little bit lately, but it's pretty bit. It was pretty clean. I spent a lot of time working on this one as far as the engineering end.
Yeah, and yeah. All I can tell you is this: is that's where I was leading you into this song with talking about riffs, because this song, for the first time I heard it, probably 2 years ago, and we threw it on the beginning of one of our episodes, DDOA, Dumbing Down of America. I'll definitely hand it over to you as far as the lyrics and everything like that. But from the first time I heard this, this sounds like Supernaut and Day Tripper had a bastard baby.
For this song, everything else Treble did.
Okay,
and that's all I had.
Yeah.
Even that breakdown part changed a little bit when we decided to record the final drum track. In that, you know, that where it breaks out of the acoustic, there's like a. That had no drums on it when we initially demoed it. But when you and Duffy were working, trying to get the final track on the drum track, you guys kind of changed that up at the last minute, and it's a brilliant move.
It was, yeah, definitely one of those moments where we were like, hey, wait a second. We can do this just that much better.
I was like in the other room, like pressing start and stop on the record, just surfing the internet, I'm sure, on my phone. And hey, by the way, Baco, we want to do this. Wasn't even listening.
But it worked out, yeah.
Again, it's a great track where the riff is probably, I've always loved the riffs that are like, it's like a 10 to 12 second riff. That's why I think about like a Day Tripper or a Supernaut that just, I mean, the first minute and a half of this is that, and then combined with the drums, whatever the fills are right there, I don't know. It's a great, like, if that song was just that riff in the beginning, it is like an intro to anything, it would be great in and of itself. The fact that it has the lyrics that I'm sure you're going to go into in a second on top of great guitars by Treble, and just the structure of it takes it. This is a standout track. That's it. I'm not going to stop gushing over this. But the point is, as you can see through this episode, I will tell you if I like a song or not, but this song is incredible.
Nice. Thanks, man.
I think this is a pretty good marriage of how Treble and I kind of come at the guitar. It's almost like, you know, we're both running at each other, and this is kind of what you get. I remember that riff, though. It was very important in my head, and it turned out almost – it's always good when the final product sounds like what you want it to sound like. I wanted the riff to be the chorus. Like, there's no actual words or lyrics. The riff actually kind of gets your brain going in the same way a chorus would.
I can see that. As it gets stuck in your head. That's what I'm saying. The riff is a, like, you're right. It's the hook.
But I had no idea what to do with it other than that. And so Treble came up with this, the verse parts that we're getting it into here. So that was great. But the lyrics, you know, kind of touch on something that I've felt a lot. And that is how we've just basically, like, dumbed down America to the point where, you know, that's the way you succeed. I think when you listen to it, I mean, I use a lot of big words like quotidian.
Oh, yes.
You know, that's so good. And you know, I definitely whipped out the Rob Halford thesaurus for this one. So
very, very
Treble. What are your thoughts on this? You did so much heavy lifting on this thing. It's amazing.
That riff was what sparked the whole song. You know, from there, it just kind of just blew up and went with it, man.
That breakdown part too, with the clean guitar, and we did that with an acoustic. I'm amazed that it sounds as good as it does, considering, you know, like how much we're a couple noobs in a basement with a Pro Tools kit. You know,
yeah. Well, funny side story on that is, like, there were times when we thought our demos were better than the finals, you know.
Hats off to Paul Stanley, beat the demo.
Yeah, right.
We kept saying that.
Had to play that beat the demo game.
This brings us to the closer of the album, and that is, it's an interesting title. It's Z, capital Z, and then Gusto. So you want to break that down?
Treble, do you remember why we called it the Gusto? I mean, I do. I'm just curious if you do.
Oh, I definitely remember.
Okay.
It was the only... we had every other letter of the alphabet, basically.
Yeah, like if you did an A to Z of all the Jesus Christ songs, we were missing three letters, G, Z, and V. And now we have a song that didn't make the record call, Grow Up and Get a Real God, which was kind of a segue, but with streaming, you know how that does a hard cut? This is kind of like one of those things that kind of seeps on the edges of two other songs. So we didn't use that. We made up the word Zagusto, because it kind of sounded like what we were talking about, just to get the letter Z. But, yeah, so we still ended up two letters short after everything is done. It seemed like, you know, calling the intro something else was too much work just to get a letter on a list. This is all the music was Treble on this one. But at the time, the Republican National Convention was going on in St. Paul, and this is about 10 minutes from my house. And protesters were showing up from out of state with buckets of piss and super soakers. They ended up getting arrested before they did anything. But I remember just thinking, like, I'm not a big protest guy to begin with. I'm a big fan of the First Amendment, so I think people have the right to do it. But I would like to see a little more, semblance of idea what you're actually accomplishing by bringing piss and spraying it on people. And to me, that was like, this is my town, this is my city, and this is how you're going to treat it because you have a different ideology. So that's where all this stuff comes from as far as lyrics. And it's a very aggressive and, you know, a different type of song for us, I think. Again, there really is no, like, verse or chorus separation, it feels like. And then you got that big middle where you just kind of go off on that solo.
Yeah, and it's, again, it's a heavy song, and I think even though it was written back then and sparked by, you know, that as far as lyrically, it's still everything in that song really is relevant today, even.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
Yeah, I think the only thing that we'd have to add to that sentiment would be tiki torches.
Got a tiki torch to tiki torch.
There you go.
Do you know what I'm talking about or not?
No, oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%.
Oh, the protest walking around.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, it's just this inane idea that you can just, you can basically abuse a freedom that we should all be happy to enjoy. And basically understand that you know, there are people who paid a price for you to have this right. And I'll defend the right up to the point of you bringing a bucket of piss or, you know, being a bunch of frat bros with tiki torches, you know?
Just think about the process of doing that, though. Going out, buying the Super Soaker, pissing in the Super Soaker, having enough piss to fill a Super do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of steps.
It's
some point, there's a lot of steps during that process where you could say, you know, this is a dumb fucking idea.
Maybe we just assign.
Yeah.
Why don't we just get a marker and some pegboard? Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so
but it's a great closer, man. The way this thing ends, you know, with the little chant that is actually there's chants at the beginning. Just a little insider. SS Treble and I in a vocal booth going, yeah, yeah,
over and over again.
Yeah, and we did we actually had to make it just so we could do it enough times to make it sound like, you know, 50 people. We had to have its own track, bounce it, and then dump that into the song. Otherwise, it would just eat up two memory on one song.
It's a crap load of reverb.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds good, though.
Yeah.
Hey, we did it.
Oh. So, great album again. Jesus Chrysler, .. Deny It All Later. Check it out. Buy it on iTunes. Stream it, whatever.
Help a just little guy out.
Yeah.
Pay the $9.
It's worth it.
Just listen to it. So I'm going to just throw it to you guys. Closing remarks on this album. I just have to say that. So before we get to closing remarks, I just want to say, you put a band together, it takes time. You know, you're going in your crazy ass basement and you're hunched over playing guitar. Is anybody too tall down there? Are you hunched over? Is Shores?
Everybody. Oh, Shores is the tallest. He's 6'2" or 6'4".
Right, but you're making these sacrifices, you're spending your free time doing this, you're creating art. And in short, I mean, you have to have the passion, just like we do this podcast. You're taking time away from whatever that is and you're doing this. So it's impressive when you finally have the final product as solid and quality as this is. So break it down. Closing remarks.
Well, for me, I would just like to say it's a relief to finally get this thing out, but it's also kind of it's almost a sense of loss because we did so much together and it was such a fun and productive time with collaborating with Treble as far as the writing and demoing and final recording and just going through the whole experience was everything I wanted it to be. So thank you, Treble. Thank you for all everything you brought to the table and just elevating, you know, all the songwriting involved in that. And if you're listening, please check out the record. I think you'll like it if you like this show, but if you don't, that's cool.
Well, for me, yeah, absolutely. Just I love writing music, and you know, I've been in this band for 14 years, and you know, it's a great time for me to get this album out, and I can't wait for everybody to hear it.
And do you have like your, I don't know if it's your, what it's called on SoundCloud, but you have your own instrumentals out there too, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I have some, you know, side project stuff.
Yeah, talk about that.
Okay, sure, yeah. You know, I do record my own noise on the side, and it's very experimental stuff, but it's different. It's a lot of just, you know, guitar playing, really, soundscapes and solos that just lead off into space.
Right, and I've heard some of them on, but what is the actual, like, we're SoundCloud/Cobra's Fire. What is yours?
Oh, it's somebody already had Treble. Can you believe that?
I do.
So, yeah.
I do,
yeah. So it's T-R-E and then the number 3 for the B and then L-E.
We'll throw a link in the show notes.
Yeah, I can send you a link. It's easier. It's stupid to try to explain it, you know.
No, I get it. I get that what you're going for there. Yeah. Check my boy out, man.
Yeah. Hey, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's really fun to be on the show, and Thank you, Budweiser.
Yeah, your stuff is. Yeah, your stuff is shown. Your stuff has shown up on my SoundCloud before because I think you like the show or whatever like that. So I've heard some of it.
Well, thank you. Shit. Yeah, like I said, I've listened to a couple episodes.
And thank you, Luz Cannon, for having me, Baco, on the show. It's good to be a guest. It's amazing that I was managed to book this. So
that's right.
It's a pretty
that's
big
right.
get for us.
It sure is. Yes. So Rock's not dead.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Doesn't matter. You'll deny it all later.
Everything you say, everything you do, don't you know it's out?
Fuel for the fire.
Everything you say, everything you do, don't you know it's out?
Fuel for the fire.
About you? Did you even think?
think about the actions in your hand. When you stand for nothing, you will fall for anything. Stand for nothing, you will fall for everything. Everything you say, everything you do, don't you know it's all
fuel for the fire?
Everything you say, everything you do, don't you know it's all
fuel for the fire?
Everything you say, everything you do, don't you know it's all
fuel for the fire?
Everything you say, everything you do, don't you know it's all
fuel for the fire?
Everything you say, everything you do, don't you know it's all
fuel for the fire?
Everything you say, everything you do, don't you know it's all
fuel for the fire?
Yeah, so
you got a pretty heavy nose whistle going tonight.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a bird in the fucking studio.
My nose? Why didn't you fucking tell me earlier?
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.